So 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 through 7. God is gracious, God is mighty, God is all sufficient. He will give you what you do not deserve. He is gracious. He is powerful. He is more than anything you may face in His powerfulness. And then He is enough no matter what you may face. And that's what we're going to focus on today here in verse number 7. And Peter shares this in two ways. When he says, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you, he first shares that in the way with the statement of fact that God cares for you. Second, with the imperative then for you to cast all your anxiety upon Him. The very problem with anxiety is that we don't cast it, we cling to it. And then it becomes a problem for us. We hold to our worries. We hide away our worries. We don't want anybody to know we're worrying. Or maybe we want everybody to know we're worrying and we want to keep on those worries because it's giving us attention. But it's a toxic thing. It's an unhealthy thing that we cling to and deal with. In verse 6, Peter has given the solution to the pride versus humility conflict to verse number 5. Verse 5, he told us, God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. Verse 6, humble yourself under His mighty hand. Verse 7 answers the question then, how? How do I humble myself under God's mighty hand? I'm worried up. I'm stressed out. I am full of cares this morning. What do I do about that? Cast all those cares upon Him. So let's begin first with that phrase this morning. Cast all your care upon God. Give Him the responsibility for your worries. That is the most literal way I can say to you what Peter is saying here this morning. Give God the responsibility for all of your worries. We take an ownership in all of our life, and we should. There's nothing wrong with that. And we feel responsible for the things in our lives. And that's okay. You're responsible for your life and yourself, your thought processes, your home, your car, your job, your family. You are responsible for these things. If you're not, who will be, right? But in the end, you don't have to be responsible for the anxiety that goes along with all of these things. We live in a fallen world. Nothing's ever going to be perfect. Until Jesus returns, then things will get perfect again. But until then, things are not going to go well. I've talked to two or three different people lately who came to me with a situation, and they said, you know, I knew what was right. I knew what should have been done that was right. But no matter how hard I tried, the right thing was not going to happen. Why is that? And I said, because we live in a fallen world. We live in a sin-cursed world. Sometimes things are just going to go wrong. But we, as responsible Christian adults, want to hold on to the responsibility of the anxiety that goes along with that. And Peter says here, cast all your care upon Him. Give God the responsibility of your worries. Worry is a form of pride, and pride is a sin. When Christians are filled with anxiety, they are convinced that they must solve all the problems in their lives in their own strength. Just be honest with me here this morning. How many of you would admit, just openly right here in front of the whole, this is just us here, right? Just our little church here. You would raise your hand and you would admit, I try my best to solve my own problems in my own strength. Look around. Just look around at all the open confession going on. It's good for the soul, isn't it? Got it out. Whew, all right, that feels better. I've admitted it now. Now we can fix the problem. Now I'm really going to lay it on you thick. I've got you to admit that publicly. And then I'm going to say this to you. This is bad of me. In that condition, the only God you're trusting in is you. The only God you're trusting in is in yourself. And we're all guilty of this at times. But I need you this morning to consider just how sinful that is. To keep your cares yourself is to imagine that you are wiser than God. Are you wiser than God? Certainly not. To keep your cares yourself is to put yourself in God's place as if you can do God's job. And there's, after last week's sermon, I can't count how many of you men came to me on the way out the door with questions along this regard, because it's innocent. And ladies, I don't know what to tell you. I can't think like a lady. I don't identify as a girl. Is that all right with everybody? We good? All right, good. But it's kind of this in us to, you know, to take courage, to be strong and courageous. Aren't those words in the Bible? Yes, it is. That's not sinful. That's not wrong. If we don't, nothing will ever get done. If we don't exert ourselves at times, we're not primitive Baptists. We're not sitting around saying, you know, que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. We're just going to sit around until Jesus comes back. We're not even going to change the light bulbs, because if God didn't want them to go out, he wouldn't have let them, and he must want them out because that's why they're out. If you have primitive Baptist families, I don't mean to insult them this morning. They make fun of us too. So yes, that we must be strong, we must be courageous, but in that we must not put ourselves in God's place as if we could do God's job. We are instruments. We are vessels for his use. At your home, you have a drawer in your kitchen, I assume, that has some forks, knives, and spoons in there. I'm on the right track here, right? Forks, knives, and spoons. You reach into that drawer, and you're going to pick up that fork, and you're going to take it to your table, and you're going to poke the meat, and you're going to use it to put the meat in your mouth to eat it. The fork didn't feed you. It was the vessel for the use of feeding you. The fork could do nothing on its own. It doesn't jump off the plate into the floor. It doesn't get itself dirty. It can't even cut the meat by itself. It has to have your force applied to it. This is how the Bible portrays our usefulness to God and our relationship with God. We are vessels, and we are to be meat for his use. But we can't do his job. To take on the role of pride here is as if we presume that God cannot help or that God will not help. Well, I've got to do this on my own because God's just not going to... Obviously, God's not going to help me in this regard. I've prayed for years. I've dealt with this for years. And I'm still dealing with this. So I guess just God is not going to help. How long was it from the time Job lost everything until the time God gave him everything back? It was a long time. There's no limit to when God can take care of things. Everything is in his time. It may not be according to your timetable. We must not ever presume that he will not help. And we certainly can know that he can help no matter what we face. Spurgeon spoke of this in regards to questions. He says, "Do we dare offer advice to perfect wisdom?" That's a convicting question, isn't it? Do we dare offer advice to perfect wisdom? I do that sometimes. Sinfully, rightfully so, it's sinful. I'm admitting it publicly this morning, and I ask God to forgive me, but I'll be reading through the Bible, and I'll be reading along, and I'll think, well, that's not the way that story needs to go. Abraham and Isaac. Abraham, take your only son Isaac, the one I promised you. I'm going to make you, Abraham's promise was, I'm going to make your family as big as numberless as all the sands in the seas and the stars in the heavens, right? And then as soon as Isaac's old enough, what's God tell him to do? Take him up on the mountain and sacrifice him to me. Well, hold everything, God. That's not how that needs to go. You and Isaac go together and sacrifice a lamb. Don't. And then now I know the rest of the story. God provides the ram, right? And he doesn't. And that was a test of Abraham's faith. In a sense, it was a test of Isaac's faith. It was imagery for us that we're going to eat as we read through the rest of the Bible. It was very appropriate. But if I were designing it, I wouldn't put it together that way. And look at all that would have been missed if humans put it together instead of God putting it together. Someone has wisely said, toward those who don't believe that God gave us the Bible, a human would never have written a book this way. A human would have never put God out to be as subject to criticism as he is in the scriptures. He would have just been completely lovey-dovey, perfect all the time. But by human standards, God is not always, because he's wrathful and he's full of judgment. He's murderous. He's bloody. There's a lot of negative things attributed to God in the scriptures as well. But it's his way. Do we dare offer advice to perfect wisdom? The other question Spurgeon threw out was, do we come before omnipotence with aid of our own strength? My son Parker right now, he's 3 years old, soon to be seven. He told me this the other day. He's just skipping 4, 5, and 6 because his older brother Thomas is 7. In Parker's world, he's as big as all the other kids. He's as strong as all the other kids. He's smarter than all the other kids. He was sitting around the other day, and he was lounging, you know, ever so. Legs crossed like this, hands behind the head, laid back on the couch, you know. And in runs Jack and Henry and Thomas, and Parker, in his very mature way, said, "Ah, my boys." We go to the grocery store. He always opens the door for all of us. He has the sensor up front, and the doors will open on their own, you know. He walks up to the doors. He uses the force, like this, you know. And he opens the doors. He holds it for us. He strains and shakes and holds it for us till we get through. The problem Parker has in his own strength is when we get to a door that will not open that way. And he walks up to the handle, and he can't even budge it. You know, he's just so small right now. He's just so weak that he can't even get it to open a little bit. He's not rattling it. He's jerking as hard as he can. He's giving it all of his might. And that door will not move a fraction of an inch. And then one of us walks out and we open it. And is this not us before God's omnipotence? Do we come before omnipotence with the aid of our strength? What can you and I do up against God's mighty hand? Nothing at all. Cast all your care upon Him. When Christians cast their worries upon God, they express their trust in His mighty hand. They acknowledge that He is Lord and sovereign over all of life. This is the right way, and this is the good way to live your life. There's two different words for care here in the Greek. Verse 7, you have casting all your care upon Him, and then you have for He careth for you. So we have our care and God's care. In the English, you get care both times there in verse number 7, but in the Greek, that's two different words. And we understand why it's two different words, because it's not the same thing. Is God care and our care the same? My cares are my anxieties. Do God have anxieties and worries? Certainly not. The difference here is care to us is exhausting, but God is inexhaustible. He is all sufficient all the time. So we have the difference between the cares there. So the first part of this is casting all your care upon Him. And then the second part of this, He cares for you. What are we to do? Cast all your care upon Him. Give up the responsibility of all your worries and all your anxieties to God. Seems like an odd thing to do. In fact, in the rest of life, it doesn't work that way. We were watching a sitcom the other day, and one of the guys on the show had his finances had gotten a little out of control. In fact, he just couldn't pay his bills anymore. He was stressed out about it. Needed a raise at work, you know, to help pay all the debt he had taken on. And somebody explained to him, "Well, maybe you should declare bankruptcy." Oh, he says, "What's bankruptcy?" And he said, "Well, it wipes away all your debt and you get a fresh start." And he said, "Perfect. That's exactly what I'll do." So he walked out in the middle of his office there with all of his friends, and he says, "I declare bankruptcy." And everybody looked at him real odd, and somebody said, "That's not really how it works." To give up the responsibility of your anxieties, exactly how it works. To give over your cares, to give over your stressors. This is exactly how it works. You declare to God, "In my own strength I cannot. Forgive me, Lord. I've been trying to do this on my own, and I have You. You are all sufficient in all areas of life. I don't have to be sufficient in these areas. Please forgive me for trying to do this in my own strength, and I give up the responsibility to You in this area." It's as simple as that. Declare it. Pray it. So that's the what. Why? He cares for you. I think back through Scripture at all of the people who could testify to that fact. People who could raise their hand this morning and say, yes, I've experienced in my life that God cares for me. In faith, I trusted God. I gave the responsibility of my anxieties to Him, and He took care of me. I mean, just go back to the beginning and think through the Bible with me. There's Adam and Eve. They messed up a little bit, didn't they? And here they are, naked. Well, before they were naked and they didn't realize it, but now all of a sudden they realize it. Their eyes had been opened. And in their nakedness, in their sin, what did they try to do before God? Hide. They're trying to hide from God. Do you see where self-sufficiency begins? Can we hide from God? Now, God played the game, Adam. Where art thou? Why did God play that game? Why did God go at it in that regard? Didn't God know where they were? He's all-knowing. Certainly He knew. There had to be a step of faith on Adam and Eve's part to trust that in their newfound state that they could somehow be restored back to God. They realized they had been separated from God. So for Adam and Eve to reveal themselves to God was a step of faith. It was, in a sense, casting that care upon Him. And what did Adam and Eve realize about God? He cares for you. Oh, they had to die. Death was the payment, was the penalty for sin. But God didn't even put the death on them, did He? He put it on His Son, Jesus Christ. Do you see how much God cares for you? Think of the initial care God gave them, just physical care. They were naked. What did God do? He killed an innocent animal to make clothing for them. I'm pretty sure He made Adam a suit and a tie, white shirt. And He took care of them. Abraham, another significant character early on in Scriptures, received a covenant promise with God. And God kept His promise to Abraham. Every jot and tittle, every aspect of it was kept. It was later in life, though, wasn't it? I mean, God had promised him, I'm going to make you a great nation. And they couldn't even have a son. God, how in the world? I'm in my 90s here. How in the world are you going to make a great nation out of me? I'm trying to stay faithful. I'm trying to stay true, but I know you're all wise, but I'm old. The time of bearing children has passed, God. You see, human wisdom can never equate to God's wisdom. And later in their years, so much later, that when they found out about it, what did Abraham and Sarah do? They cackled. Y'all know what cackling is? Belly laughing. I'm pretty sure Sarah was the first woman to get so tickled that she snorted. But she had a son, Isaac. God kept His promise. They trusted God and God cared for them. We already talked about God providing a ram. Abraham and Isaac go up the mountain. They cast that care upon God and God cared for them. He provided a ram for the sacrifice. You think about Joseph. I mean, we could spend the rest of the time this morning and more talking about all the instances in Joseph's life where he had to cast his cares upon God. He was in a pit. He was in a prison. On and on and on. We go through these times where Joseph was not in a good way in life. And God took care of him. Jochebed. Oh, I love Jochebed's story. That may not be familiar to you. I hope that it is. This is Moses' mother. Everybody knows about Moses. But Jochebed, by faith, Jochebed literally cast her cares, didn't she? She put little baby Moses in a little basket into the river. Though he was to be aborted, though he was to be killed early on. And how did God care for her? He arranged it so that she could take care of her child in the king's house, under the watch care of the king's daughter, with the king's money. Cast all your care upon Him. He cares for you. Do you see how that God's way always ends up better for you than your own way does? Well, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And God, we're asking that you would bless it. That's man-made. God's way is simply, God, whatever you'd had me to do, that's what I'll do because I know you'll bless it. Moses, how many instances could we talk about this morning of God caring for him? Let's just talk about one. He decides to lead the people out of Egypt. And God tells him to do it, and Moses resists him at first, doesn't he? Pharaoh resists him. All the plagues and all these things. And they get up before the Red Sea, and there's a mountain there. They can't go left. They can't go right. They can only go forward, and the army's in the back. Well, what are we going to do? God dried up the sea. That's miraculous. They walked across on dry ground, and we know that it was sea enough that it could have killed them all because Pharaoh's army followed, and they were all killed. Cast all your care upon him. He will care for you. It won't always be the most comfortable thing. You're toting something this very morning that you need to give over the responsibility to God. It will not be comfortable for you to take your hands off of that in your life, just as it was not comfortable for Moses to even in faith lift up the rod. God said, lift up the rod and I'll part the Red Sea there. Well, what if God had it part of the Red Sea? You know how goofy Moses would have looked? What's Moses down there doing again? He's got that rod up. Nothing's happening. You know how foolish he would have looked if nothing would happen? This is what goes through the human mind when we decide to let go of our own anxieties. We decide to give over our stressors. But if we hold on to it in a very humanly powerful way, come hell or high water, at least it's mine. At least I'm taking responsibility for this. It seems weak to turn it over. But in God's view, it's weak for you to try to handle it on your own. What about Esther? What a great story. She put her life on the line for God's people. It was either be beheaded or have the right thing done here toward God's people. And she had to be the one to go in before the king. Job lost it all. Remained true to God in spite of all of his blessings in life being taken away. And God gave it all back to him and more. How about Daniel? Daniel was only, he was just praying. He wasn't starting a riot against the king. He was just praying. And some gossiping busybodies got to going against Daniel. They didn't stay home and keep their mouths shut. Amen. We talk too much. And Daniel ends up in a den of lions because he wouldn't stop praying. He didn't do a million-man march. He wasn't on some kind of promise keeper's crusade here. Daniel was just a guy who prayed three times a day, and they said, you better stop doing that. And he said, I'm not going to stop doing that. I'm praying. They can't stop you from praying, can they? They can stop you from talking. They can stop you from walking. They can stop you from doing a whole lot of things, but they cannot stop you from praying. And here's Daniel in a den of lions. He has cast all his care upon God. And how did the king find him the next day? He said, oh, Daniel, I hope you're all right. And Daniel was all right. On and on and on we can go through the Bible. Let's just skip up to Jesus. Now, Jesus is a unique case because when we talk about casting all your care upon God, well, Jesus is God. But Jesus was the God-man. The man, Jesus, still cast all his care upon God. If God the Son needed to cast his care upon God, don't you think you need to as well? That thing you're carrying, that what you're struggling with, if Jesus had to give his over to God, don't you think you need to? If Jesus needed to pray, don't you need to pray? Absolutely. What was his prayer in the garden? If it be thy will, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. He cast his care upon God. That is what verse 7 is all about. Think of that. Not my will, casting all your care. Lord, it'd be my will for me to tote this, and you'd help me along with what I'm trying to tote here. But I'm going to cast all my care upon you, not my will. And then, but thine be done. Upon him, for he cares for you. That's God's will in your life, is to let him care for you instead of you caring for yourself. Jesus on the cross. Do you remember those famous words that he declared to the Father? Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. What did he do there? At the end of his life, he casted all of his care, his very will to live, right upon the Father. He had lived a sinless life. He had earned redemption, but he still had to die. And he put that in the Father's hands. Isn't death a source of anxiety? Isn't death a source of stress? Certainly it was. But Jesus never sinned, even in death. Why? Because he trusted the Father, believing that very thing. And then let's get to Peter. Peter's our writer here, and his life tells the tale that we're trying to see this morning. He knew this all too well. In Mark chapter number 1, Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law. I mean, here's Peter hoping his mother-in-law just going to heaven, get out of his way. No, wait, sorry, I got that backwards. No, she was sick. And Jesus healed her. In Luke chapter number 5, Jesus gave him a great catch of fish. In fact, I want you to hold your place in 1 Peter 5 and turn to Luke chapter 5. I want to read some of that to you. Luke chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 17, Jesus helped Peter pay his taxes. In Matthew chapter 14, Jesus helped Peter walk on the water. We read that this morning. In Luke 22 and John chapter 18, Jesus repaired the damage that Peter did to Malchus's ear. Remember, he was trying to protect Jesus. He pulled out a sword. He swung it at Malchus's head. Malchus bowed over and cut his ear off. What did Jesus do? Peter could have been arrested for that. He could have been in big trouble for cutting a guy's ear off. Jesus reached up and grabbed his ear and put it back on his head and healed him. If anybody knew that casting all your care upon him before he cares for you is true in life, it was Peter. Acts 12, we read just a couple weeks ago, Jesus delivered Peter from prison. You need to put all of that into perspective, given your own situation. All of these instances in Peter's life, he is communicating to the suffering church here. Cast all your care upon him. He cares for you, says Peter. Peter personally experienced him heal a sick family member. Peter personally experienced God give financial help. Peter personally was physically delivered from harm by God. He was going to drown and God pulled him up from it. Jesus did. Peter made a big mistake and really hurt a guy, but God fixed it. Here in Luke chapter number 5, Peter's business was made profitable directly by God after he turned it over to him. Read with me in Luke chapter 5 verse 1. And it came to pass, as the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret, and saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them, and were washing their nets. And he entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, Simon's Peter's name, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land, and he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, launch out into the deep, and let your nets down for a draught. And Simon answered and said unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night, and we have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake. And they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the draught of the fishes which they had taken. And so also was James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, Fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men. And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Y'all know the little song. Peter, Andrew, James, and John in the sailboat out on the deep blue sea. They fished all night, but they caught no fishes. They fished all night, but they caught no... Y'all been there? I fished all night and caught no fish. It's no fun, isn't it? Let me think about the story we just read here. Peter is fishing, but Jesus needs a place to preach. The people are crowding him. He can't preach to the people. The throng, they call them here. So he said, I'll preach from Peter's boat. He says, Peter, just let me get on the boat and you just get just far enough away from the shore here that they can still hear me, but they can't get at me and I can preach to these people. Well, the problem with that is Peter was a fisherman by trade. This was his job. This was his work. And Jesus is saying, stop working. Stop making money. Serve me so that I can serve God. So he borrows Peter's boat. He preaches in it. So that's the end of fishing for the day. What is the application there? Is it to say it's going to cost you something to serve God? That's not how it ended, was it? In fact, it's just the opposite. The application could be God will never require anything from you that he does not recompense. No sooner is the sermon done than Jesus says to them, put out in the deep water and let down your nets for a catch. Verse number 4, that's what he told them there. He said, go out a little deeper, put down your nets for a catch. The objection there was, we fished all night. Human wisdom. Do we dare put human wisdom up against God's omniscience? Certainly we don't. Peter says, okay, it's your command, we'll do it. And Peter gets more fish in 10 minutes through having lent his boat to Jesus than he might have ever caught in 10 weeks fishing on his own account. He caught so many fish that he had to call two other boats over there to help him get them all in. What do we learn from that story? Leave your cares with God. It goes back to pride versus humility. Those are your two options in how you live your life. And for 3 Sundays now, and I'm done with it, but for 3 Sundays now, I have worked through this with you. My goal was to make a case to you that your best option in life, given any circumstance, is to trust God. God is gracious. God is mighty. God is all sufficient. You'll have a hard time convincing Peter that he is not. And to think of all those people throughout biblical history, I think they would submit to you, cast your care upon God. He cares for you. Whatever your need is today, God is enough. If you need salvation, he has already accomplished this for you. Receive it by faith. If you need financial help, if you have a physical need, if you have a sick loved one, if you have a struggling business, whatever it is, cast your care upon him. He cares for you. Would you stand with me?